Welcome to the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with your host, accountant and author Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA. Join Carol as she shares her knowledge on a topic of interest to everyone, money. On the show, Carol will discuss starting and running a microbusiness, teaching your kids about money, and managing money in a homeschool organization. Carol takes confusing topics such as money and business and puts them into clear English. She's ready to share her knowledge with you on today's show.
Hi, and thanks for listening to the Dollars and Cents podcast. I'm Carol Topp, your host, and welcome to episode number 52. This is a first of two-part podcast. 52 and 53 will be about homeschool co-ops, how to start them, run them, and not burn out. So especially helpful to those of you who are homeschool leaders or thinking about starting a homeschool co-op in your local area. I wrote a book of the same title, Homeschool Co-ops, How to Start Them, Run Them, and Not Burn Out. And you can find that book over at homeschoolcpa.com. Obviously, I cannot cover in even a two-part podcast, an hour-long presentation like this one that you're going to hear, everything that's covered in the book. So this is just high-level information. You'll find a whole lot more in the book of the same title. This is a presentation I did at a homeschool convention in 2015, so you may hear a little bit of the questions from the audience. And in this first part, I talk about starting your homeschool co-op, some good tips and a good advice about starting one, and then setting up a board, budget, and bylaws, successfully running it. And then in the second part, you'll hear some more information about tax-exempt status for your nonprofit homeschool co-op, and also questions and answers from the audience. So I hope you find this helpful. And if you do, I would sure appreciate a positive review, either over at iTunes or comment, or just share this information on Facebook. You can find my Facebook site. It's Homeschool CPA. Just go to homeschoolcpa.com and you will find all this podcast posted, as well as information on different social media, whichever you prefer. But I sure do appreciate it when you share or pin or post or like anything, because that helps other people know that these resources are available for homeschool leaders. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the podcast, and I hope it helps you start, run your homeschool co-op without burning out.
Bill's coming, so we'll go ahead and get started, especially because we've got a lot of information to cover. Welcome. My name is Carol Topp. This is Homeschool Co-ops, How to Start Them, Run Them, and Not Burn Out. How many of you are currently running a homeschool co-op? A few of you, good. How many of you are thinking of running it or being asked to go into leadership? Good, mix of both. Okay. So we're going to cover several topics, and then we're going to leave it open for what you have concerns or questions about, because there might be a lot. I'm here all weekend. You can come down and see me at my booth. I'm right next door to HSLDA, because there's usually specific things related to your specific co-op that you might want to talk more one-on-one than in the group, but we'll see. Okay? Shelley, right? Shelley came down to my booth. I'm going to pick on you a little bit. And this is happening more and more frequently. Leaders will call me or consult or send me an email or something saying, I'm thinking of starting a homeschool group or homeschool co-op, which is just a bunch of homeschoolers coming together, right? And some of the first things that we have to talk about now, which it didn't used to have to be this way, but now I say, are you running this as your business or as a nonprofit organization run by a board? And I didn't have to used to ask them that, but more and more homeschool organizations are starting as businesses. And this is what Shelley's trying to decide. Some people have asked her to start an organization, and I said, is it going to be your business or a nonprofit? Okay, so that's kind of the first thing. For-profits are usually owned by somebody, and the owner has control of the group and of the program and the purity of the program and what she does, because it's a she, sometimes it's a guy. She's the owner. It's probably less likely in a for-profit business that you have that sense of volunteerism or that sense of we're all cooperating together, because it is owned by somebody, right? It's their business. And ultimately that owner will pay taxes on any surplus Most homeschool organizations, homeschool co-ops in particular, but support groups definitely, have been nonprofit organizations, meaning nobody owns them. They're run by a board of people, a group of people. And co-op, heck, the word co-op means cooperate together, right? So co-ops by nature usually do a lot better with getting volunteers to work together. All pitch in. Let's all pitch in and help educate each other's kids. That's the idea of a co-op, right? And if they apply, and usually they're eligible and they apply, they are eligible for tax-exempt status from the IRS. And then usually after that with the state of Michigan, which is a wonderful place to be because you don't pay any taxes on your surplus. And we can cover that as you have more questions about it. Okay? So I call my book Homeschool Co-ops, How to Start Them, Run Them, and Not Burn Out. The not burnout really starts with how did you start your co-op? Because typically if you start your co-op and you run it properly, you don't burn out. And usually leaders suffering from burnout have done something have maybe not started it or run it in such a way to keep from burning out. So let's talk about if you're going to start a co-op, obviously one of the first important things you want to do is pray about it, ask the Lord for wisdom, ask the Lord for guidance. He always answers those prayers. He will always give you wisdom and guidance if you ask for it. Maybe coming to a workshop today like this or getting encouragement from other leaders is part of his answer to prayer. So pray a lot for wisdom and guidance. And then try to find what I call like-minded people. Not like-minded in every way. Heck, we're homeschoolers. No, I don't even agree with myself all the time, right? I can certainly not agree with other people all the time. But major on the majors. You know, what is this homeschool co-op going to be? And find people who are like-minded in that. If there are more homeschool leaders that have a desire to reach non-faith-based people, they just do. If you're going to start that kind of group, you need to find like-minded people. Because there are a whole lot of other people who say, no, I definitely want a faith-based co-op, and you got to sign a statement of faith to be part of it. So anyway, see how like-mindedness is really important, part of managing expectations, too. Especially in your leadership, that's why I put like-minded officers. Not every member necessarily will sign on, but at least your leadership board, you have to have some commonality of the vision and the purpose of this group. Easier said than done, but it's really important to think about that kind of stuff because if you don't, that's where a lot of conflicts arise. We assumed different things from the very beginning about what this co-op was all about. So in your normally you gather a few people around you to say, I want to start a co-op. You hold an organizational planning meeting with just a few people, not too many, not every member, not everybody's going to be part of it, just the people who say, I might be involved in leadership or I might be involved in launching this, but then I want to step down, whatever. But anyway, these are the people who are going to help you launch. And you think about a couple things that I call the 4 W's and 2 C's. These are the questions that have to be decided pretty early on. And as in discussing these things, you'll figure out who's like-minded with you and who's not. Or maybe you'll figure out what you're willing to give on. Okay. The 4 W's are the what, the where, the when, the who. In other words, what are we? Are we an enrichment co-op? Are we a co-op? Meaning people voluntarily teach classes, or are we going to bring in hired teachers, more of a what I would call an educational program? Are we enrichment? Are we academic? Who are we serving? Is it going to be K-12, or is it only going to be high school? There's a group in Cincinnati called Double Digits. Really cute, because you have to be in double digits to be in this co-op. So they're not trying to serve the whole family. The children are double digits and up. Kind of cute, right? 10 years old and up. Are we going to let kids be dropped off, or is it meant for the whole family? All kinds of questions to be asked there. The when are we going to meet? Once a week? Once every other week? How long? 3 hours? 1 hour? Is it just a science co-op meets 1 hour once a week? For 8 weeks? For 16 weeks? Lots of variety. No right or wrong, just lots of variety. And sometimes the when is dictated by the where. Where can I find a church or a building or a library? And they will usually dictate when you can meet. And that's sometimes a real struggle. Where can we meet? Cost and curriculum. Now, most homeschool groups try to run very low cost, but I'm finding, like I said, more and more and more that are saying, we're here to serve whatever the homeschool this homeschool group's needs, and sometimes parents are quite willing to pay, especially at the high school level, for the classes that their kids need, because it's still cheaper than private school. So don't think you have to go extremely low cost, but that is something to consider, right? And then ultimately, what curriculum? Is it going to be left up to the teacher to decide the curriculum, or are you going to set? I mean, there are like Tapestry of Grace homeschool co-ops. They all study Tapestry of Grace together, which is kind of a cool idea for a co-op. Okay? See, lots of things to decide, and these things can change over time. But at least for your planning meeting, and maybe every year you have that planning meeting, reevaluate these questions again. The important thing here is that you're ultimately trying to manage expectations of both your leaders to start and ultimately then the people who come, your members. And in my book, Homeschool Co-ops, same title as the workshop, I have you work through your expectations, and maybe your members should do that too. So when I joined my homeschool co-op, my expectations were basically I wanted classes. And my daughters were relatively old. I mean, they were like fourth grade or something like that, maybe fourth and sixth, something like that. I just wanted the few classes that I thought were better in a group than at home alone. So, for example, one of the classes offered was a speech class for my sixth grader. That's what I wanted. I had to let go of everything else. Does that make sense? So you think through, what do I want and what do I not expect? Because your co-op cannot be all things to everyone. So you mentally go through that and ask your people to go through that too. What I want most, and additionally I'd like, but I know I may not get it. Therefore, you know, if someone starts to complain about, you guys don't offer field trips or you don't offer high school biology, your reply as the leader would be, what were your expectations of this co-op? And as a co-op leader, I'm not here to offer everything to you. Ultimately, you are not responsible for homeschooling their children, and don't take on that responsibility. I also say, I can't remember, I think I say it later in your notes, your homeschool co-op is not necessary to the success of homeschooling. So don't take on that burden either. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Because a lot of times homeschool mothers would love to put that burden, fathers too, but more of the mothers would love to put that burden on you. You organize my field trip, co-op leader. You're like, you know, no. Okay, so understand that people come in with lots of expectations. Some of them are unvoiced. They only get voiced when they're mad that you don't meet those expectations. So anyway, so it's a really good idea as part of this whole planning and thinking, starting to write your purpose statement. Can you hear me okay in the back? I'm not mic'd. Okay. I prefer not to because it's one more thing in my hand. We are what? We are a sports co-op. We are an enrichment co-op. We are an educational program, not a co-op at all. We are what? And we do, or we offer this. Now that can change every year, like if you have biology one year, not biology another year, right? But for starters, and we offer classes once a week. Volleyball for girls. I'm helping a homeschool organization right now that offers volleyball, and I think one other sport for girls, grades 5 through 12. That's their focus. Wow, cool. So think about writing that purpose statement, sharing it with the people that might join you, sharing it definitely among the leaders. Got it? If you don't have that, you can be blown about by every desire that comes your way, and that's what causes burnout.
Homeschool leader, do you feel confused or overwhelmed by the job of running your homeschool group? You're not alone. Carol Topp, the homeschool CPA, is here to help. Carol is an accountant, author, and retired homeschool mom who understands you. Her website has helpful information on co-ops, paying workers, and managing the money in a homeschool group. If you need personalized advice, set up a consultation with Carol. She's happy to discuss your particular situation. Visit homeschoolcpa.com today and get the information you need to successfully run your homeschool group.
I was telling Shelly this, wasn't I, Shelly? Tips for your first year. Start very small. If it's your first year, you should and cap the number of people that come to your co-op. Your first year is the year for you to work out the kinks. So 20 families at most your first year, maybe 10. And you'll just have to say, we've capped it. It's really hard when they're your friends. But you cap it at a certain number of families, and you say, we might expand next year, but for now, our first year, we just need to work on getting. And even as you're bigger, a lot of times the church or the facility using caps the size. And I've heard, ladies and gentlemen, this year, 2015, more than any other year, and I've been helping homeschool groups for 10 years now, 10 years. This year, more than any other, I have heard more homeschool leaders contact me via email or phone, and they're saying, my group doubled in size this year. And some are tripling. We had 8 families, now we have 20, and we have a waiting list. And not just one or two. It's just been mind-boggling to me how often I'm hearing that. So there will be pressure for you to expand your group. And what you say is, right now, no, but I heard this lady, and she's got a book, so go start your own co-op. You know what I'm saying? You can launch more, a little bit like churches. Some churches believe in growing to a certain size and then launching others, planting churches. You could do that because it's just a lot, especially the first year. So limit it. Also, maybe think about a very short duration the first time. A semester is typically 15 or 16 weeks long. If you don't want to do that the first time, just offer it for 8 weeks. So we're going to try it for 8 weeks, then we're going to take a break of maybe a month, and then we're going to see who's interested in the next 6 or 8 weeks. Sometimes in the fall, it's harder to get that all in if you want to take a break for December, and a lot of homeschool co-ops take the month of December off because Christmas is just kind of, you know, busy. So think about that. You can limit it how many weeks your group runs. Okay? Any questions or comments or observations at this point? Basically, you're ready to launch your program. If you've thought through who we are, what do we offer, what are we going to charge, you start advertising. Actually, you hardly need to do any advertising. Didn't I just say lots of groups have waiting lists? It's like word of mouth. It gets around. But typically, you want to give out the information. A new co-op is starting. If you're interested, here are the details. Sign up or whatever. You get an EIN from the IRS. Apologize for the acronyms there. EIN is Employer Identification Number. You need that to open up a checking account. Okay? It's a free number you get from the IRS, irs.gov. I walk through the examples of filling out the form called an SS4 in my book on money management so you can know how to do it properly. Don't check the wrong boxes. It could come back to haunt you. And then you go to the bank and you open a checking account in the name of this new organization with the employer identification number the IRS gave you. It's not a good idea to open it up in your own name and Social Security number unless it is your for-profit business. You're running it as your business. And the reason you don't want to open up a bank account for the group in your Social Security number is because the IRS would consider that your personal income and would ask why you're not putting that on the tax return. And they'd say, well, it's this group I run. Well, they're supposed to have their own employer identification number. An LLC stands for Limited Liability Company Status. My business, Carol Top CPA, has LLC status. I am a sole proprietorship, meaning one owner. Other types of businesses are partnerships and corporations. I am a sole proprietorship. I have added LLC status to my sole proprietorship. You add it by going to the state, filing some paperwork. Okay? So that means a for-profit business. 501c3, I'm visually moving over here. 501c3 is a tax-exempt status that homeschool co-ops are eligible for because they have an educational purpose. It is an application you file with the IRS. You give them some information about yourself, check some boxes. I walk groups through doing that. And then they are tax exempt, don't have to pay taxes on their surplus. The for-profit LLC over here does. They pay taxes like any business. So that's kind of the big difference. In the first slide, did you come in on the first slide? The differences also have to do with control. 501c3 nonprofits are run by boards. For-profits are owned and controlled by the owner. She's got a big decision to make, okay? Big decision, because you really don't do anything else till you've decided that. Because when you go apply for this employer identification number, you have to check a box. Am I a sole proprietorship? Am I a partnership, corporation, nonprofit? She needs to decide that now. Homeschool support groups should have employer identification numbers too. But if you're going to run it, now I'm going to switch completely to the nonprofit mode, okay? The nonprofit, because that's what most of our homeschool co-ops especially are. Co-op, again, we're all cooperating together. So we're in this to help each other. We're not in this as a profit motive for the business owner. To be the best and not burn out, the best nonprofits are run by a board of people. I like to talk about board budgets and bylaws. That's what makes you a nonprofit, that you are run by a board. You have some organizing document called bylaws. And being a CPA, I like to see you have a budget, a control, a plan with money. But ultimately, you want a board because it is so easy to burn out. Even Moses, as you remember from the Old Testament, was given this advice. His father-in-law came to see Moses as he's wandering around the desert. And he's seen that all the people are coming to Moses with their problems. And his father-in-law says, this is not good. This is not good. I mean, in modern day language, you'd say, you're going to burn out, Moses. And he gives them the advice about finding people among the elders and organizing them into groups of 70 and things like that. Find leaders. We can take that same advice and gather people around us to help us carry the burden. You should not be running this by yourself. A lot of times I hear co-directors, like two ladies will lead, and I say that's still not really enough. 3 to 5 people, even if you want to call them board of advisors or whatever you want to call them, think about at least 3, probably 5, because there's a lot of decision-making to be done, and you don't want that to fall on one person. It's too much to bear. It's too much for Moses to decide all these things. He was supposed to split up the burden. Oop. So there I go. I said it already. But a minimum of 3 people. And if your group gets large enough, and I'm talking about co-ops with like more than 20 families, 20, 50, 100 families. I've heard of homeschool organizations with hundreds of families. It's usually in Texas. They're bigger. Everything's bigger in Texas. Form committees, you know, so you could have the field trip committee or the graduation committee. I was on the graduation committee. We just worked on graduation. What other kind of committees? Fundraising is sometimes a committee. Sometimes a committee of one person, like hospitality, meaning this person, or care, like gives out birthday cards, or you just make sure everybody's doing okay or welcoming or something like that. But try to set up committees and funnel some of the jobs out to, basically, in a co-op, hopefully everybody has a job to do. That's cooperation, right? Not everybody. Give them grace, because, you know, homeschooling can be quite burdensome, and some families out there are dealing with a lot. But ideally, everybody has some kind of a job. One of my best tips for your boards is to schedule meetings regularly, probably in the first year, every month. I knew a homeschool co-op that the leaders all had the same hour, like they met for 3 hours on a Friday or something. All the leaders had the same hour free, available, open, and they had their board meetings then, every week. And if there wasn't anything to discuss, then they prayed for their co-op, for the families, for the needs, or they could have a little training or discussion or something like that. So schedule it regularly. So I was brought in as a consultant, I guess, to this homeschool program that only met when there was a crisis. So guess how long the board meetings went? They were horrible because it's a crisis and the emotions are high. And they brought me in, I guess, like I said, to be a consultant or something. Well, at some point in the meeting, one of the members gets angry, whips out, she had already prepared it, her letter of resignation, and slaps it down on the table. Part of the problem was the founder, which, first of all, the founder had what's called founder syndrome. She had a hard time letting go of her baby. But she also didn't do a very good job of regular meetings for her to communicate the vision and the purpose of the group. And so this one particular board member was kind of a going off, and that's what the crisis was. You know, the leader, the founder said, no, this is our vision. You can't do that. And the board member quit. I think if she had scheduled regular meetings, she would have been more clear. Things would have been taken care of before they came crises, before they became a crisis. And she could have also communicated her vision and kept it pure, if you will. Does that make sense? So schedule regular meetings, even if you don't think you have to or have something come up, once a month minimum, I think. Keep minutes of the meetings. Record who said they would do what. Now, I ended up looking at the minutes of, when I came on my homeschool co-op board, I ended up somehow looking at the minutes of previous meetings. They were putting in the minutes too much detail. Like, John had an opinion on this, and Deborah had a different opinion on that, and Susan voted this way, and Debbie voted that way, and you're like, no. And then I found where my name as a member was discussed. Carol Topp wanted to, keep the names out of it. A member asked if she could have a discount. The board discussed whatever, opening up to paid teachers. The decision was made not at this time. That's all you record, not the personal interactions of who said what. Got it? So keep the minutes at a high level, but don't put down individual names. Got it? We don't need that kind of stuff coming back to haunt you or the people giving their opinion. You should be free to give your opinions, but not have names recorded. Does that make sense? Just decisions that the board makes. It was discussed, it was voted, it was decided. Have any of you been on a church board or been on a board of a nonprofit and seen how that works? That's really helpful if your board, as you're forming, has somebody who's been on a board before and can kind of say, here's my experience from my church board or other nonprofit boards. Okay. Bylaws. I have sample bylaws on my website, homeschoolcpa.com, under the page called Leader Tools. Bylaws are kind of like the rules of how the organization will operate. They're not your specific policies. You might want specific policies in another document, like what happens if you don't pay? What happens if you have a sick kid? How many absences can you have? Who serves? Those are policies. Bylaws are one level up. They're a little higher. Like, who are the members? Who can belong to this group? Do they have to sign a statement of faith? Do they have to be legally homeschooling? Will we allow charter schools? These kinds of important questions. But who can belong? That's your first question to answer. Do they get a vote? More and more homeschool groups are saying, we want the board to vote on things. We don't give a vote to the members. Or maybe they give the members a vote on who becomes the board. But a lot of them don't. They say, we want to make sure this is not a popularity contest. We want to make sure that we put board members in place who share our vision. So we're going to pick the next board member. Make sense? Kind of a good idea. How those board members chosen. Okay. Budget. I'm whipping right through these. These are the building blocks of any good organization. A board, bylaws, which you can use my sample and tweak them, and a budget. Now, a budget should list what is your income, where is your income going to come from, as well as what are your expenses. And with trying to guess the income, you be as conservative as possible. You don't predict that you're going to get a lot of money, especially not from fundraisers. But when it comes to expenses, you're exactly the opposite. Think of everything you could possibly spend money on. That's the best way to do a household budget, too, if you think about it, you know. But we usually do it the opposite. Optimistic about income. And then make sure you budget. Your treasurer should prepare a budget for you. Actually, real numbers that you look at. Because I just call that planning with dollars. Okay, where's our money going to come from? Tuition. How much are we charging for tuition and fees? Are we giving discounts? These number decisions need to be decided. Who gets a discount? Is it only for families in need? How are we going to decide if they're in need? Who's going to judge that? Are we going to keep that confidential? Are we going to discuss it at the board meeting? That kind of thing. Have a little extra for uncertainties. So in my homeschool co-op, fortunately we had insurance, liability insurance. The church we belong to required us to have what's called general liability insurance, which kind of covers the property damage. And one of the moms ran this really cool class. She called it Destruction, where the kids brought in appliances and put on goggles and used screwdrivers and sometimes hammers, and they took apart the appliances, which is kind of cool, like dissection, only, you know, no guts. And someone donated a printer, and the kids were going to take it apart in the destruction class. But what she didn't know was the printer was leaking toner all the way down the carpeted hallway of the church that we were meeting in. Yeah. So our poor secretary, she tried all co-op to scrub that thing out, and we had to go to the church and say, we got a problem. And they said, well, okay, before you call your insurance and put in a claim and replace the carpet. Call a professional carpet cleaner. $250 later, the professional carpet cleaner got it out. But that was a $250 expense we didn't expect. So you have to budget for uncertainties, at least the amount of your deductible on your insurance policy. Hopefully, if you're meeting in a church, they might cover you, but they might ask for you to have pay the deductible if you have damage. And maybe like 10% or more, maybe 30% of your total income as a buffer that you carry over then. Okay? Or if you're planning some big event, you can carry over a lot. Okay? If I said if you're planning for a big event, I mean if you have future needs that you know are coming. So I know one group that's sitting on more than a year of income as their surplus. But that's because they said our church lets us meet for free now. We think they're going to start charging us rent, or we may have to find a new facility. So they have a large buffer because they expect to be paying rent soon. And then what they'll happen is they don't have to increase their prices a whole lot to the family. They may phase in over a couple of year price increases and use up their buffer. Make sense? Sorry, CPA may coming out.
Thank you for joining the Dollars and Cents Radio Show with Carol Topp here at the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. For more helpful information, visit Carol at her website, homeschoolcpa.com.